podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run. Hey, this is Chris. We're going to do a little time travel this morning, a little temporal distortion, because I got Mr. McGillivray back on the phone this morning, and I'm going to stick him back into episode 9 where he was originally, because I recorded our conversation. We had a great conversation, and then it didn't record on the internet phone call thingy, so that's what happens. You know, it's all technology. So if some of this stuff seems a little out of sequence on today's episode, episode 9, you'll know why. Hey, good morning. This is Chris. I like to do my recording in the morning. I'm a little bit fresher, but I usually start work pretty early. Hey, I had a great week. I mean, I had a good week. Wacky weather this week in New England. We had, like, tornadoes and floods, and I was driving to work yesterday, and there was, like, a foot and a half of water on the ground. It was, like, it reminds me of when I used to work in Mexico, down in Chihuahua, Ciudad Chihuahua. I used to get those floods like that in the roads. But I got my 40 miles plus in over the last weekend for my ultra training. Everything's feeling felt really strong on Saturday. But I'm thinking about changing it because they got me. This program I'm following has like a 4-hour run on Saturday and then another 3-hour run on Sunday, and the Sunday run's just miserable. I don't think I like that. So I think I'm going to change it, do one real long run with sort of a short cleanup run on Sunday, do it that way instead. I'm not real comfortable with these back-to-back workouts. I understand the theory, which is it's all sort of one big workout, and you're training your body to run when tired, but I just don't like it. I don't think it's a good fit for my body, for where I am right now. So I'm going to look good. I got a couple of ultra guys that I'm going to try to chat up and see what the story is. With any luck, I'll be talking to Dave McGillivray today. I got him on my schedule for an interview. And if you know Dave, he's not only a great guy, but he's a famous guy here in New England. So he's the current race director of the Boston Marathon. Got some other great interviews lined up as well. Went running last night. Got 3 runs in this week. Tuesday night, had sort of a crappy slow run with the dog in the woods. I was feeling kind of sluggish, so on Wednesday I hit the treadmill here at work and threw in 3 one-mile repeats at a nice little sub-marathon pace. Just to, every once in a while you got to do that, just to get the blood flowing. Didn't want to go to the track. It was pouring rain. And then last night I went out with the club. We ran in on the rail trail with the headlamps at night, and it was kind of cool. I ran with this young lady who just joined our club, who is an ex-college cross-country runner, so it's kind of neat talking to somebody 30 years younger than me and getting their perspective on the world. I'll see if I can interview her, break my old guy streak. Well, I got a little pain in the Achilles, but nothing that can't be managed. And I'm going to talk about managing Achilles pain, because that's definitely a real common injury that can be managed. And so, let's have a great show here today, all right?
And now, for the equipment check.
So, a lot of people have knee pain when they're runners, and I have had a broken patella, because I randomly drove into a tree with my truck, but that's another story. And so, I want to talk to you about knee braces. And there's all kinds of robo-knee braces, but the one I used is very comforting, and I wore it for about 6 months. It's called a McDavid knee brace, and it's got the little hole where your knee pokes out, and that would be my alarm going off there. And it's made out of that like thick scuba suit material. It's red on the inside, black on the outside, and it's very comforting. You know, I'm not sure how much support they give you, but they're very comforting. I would recommend these sort of neoprene braces, and they make them for different parts of the body too. But it's very comforting. You know, it gives you that that feeling that you got just enough support there without hampering your range of movement. I like them. Bye.
And now for our featured interview.
So I'm pretty psyched to be interviewing David Gilbrey here. He's sort of a hero of everybody around here. I started a conversation with Dave back when he published his book a couple years ago, The Last Pick. He sent me a signed copy. What a nice guy. He says, and he wrote in it. He wrote, "To Chris, thanks for all you do for our sport, and thanks for the wonderful review on Amazon.com. Keep up the great writing." And then he puts in quotes under the title, "Set Goals, Not Limits. Friendship, Dave McGilbrey." So, pretty cool guy. He's got reviews over here from Lance Armstrong and Andy Burfoot and Bill Rogers. And, you know, these is a couple, Doug Flutie, Dennis Eckersley. These are the type of people that Dave hangs out with. I don't know what he's doing talking to me. But, so what does Lance say? Lance says, and I quote, "As endurance athletes, the challenge often is about strength of our hearts more than strength of our legs. Dave's message is consistent with most of us who set lofty goals, to have the guts to make a commitment, to prepare like no other, to accept the consequences involved, and to never rest on your laurels." Because the other thing about Dave is that all the stuff he's done, he's run across America, he's biked across, you know, multiple times, and he's done the 24-hour swim, the 24-hour ride, all this great stuff, but every time he does it for a cause, and he's real big with the Jimmy Fund. And the reason I'm chatting him up is I got a note from him that he's going to recreate his famous 1970-something entrance into Fenway Park, where he ran across the country, and he planned it so he would arrive at Fenway Park and run around the park at, like, the seventh inning stretch or something, and be announced and do this thing with the Jimmy Fund. So Dave's really... What you can say about Dave is he's always giving back. He's always doing something. And he's frenetic. He's a guy who I can send three days before the marathon, I can send him an email at 3 o'clock in the morning, and in 5 minutes later I'll get a response. You know, I've never seen anybody who works as hard or is as well organized as Dave is. So we'll have to chat about his book and his new thing. What he's doing is he's going to be coming in and running around Fenway Park, because one of Dave's traditions is he runs his age in miles on his birthday, which is starting to be a challenge for Dave because he's 54 this year. So what the guys over there at Fenway are going to allow him to come in and recreate his entrance and run, when he runs his 54 miles, he's going to finish in Fenway. And of course, it's going to be tied into some charity. So I'll let him talk about those charities and such, but I'm pretty excited about this.
Hey, it worked.
All right. We're being recorded.
Yeah, so don't swear.
All right.
I don't anyways. Yeah, right.
All right, then don't yodel.
Okay.
Because nobody likes
have at it.
So your sounds like your birthday thing went on okay.
Yeah, a lot better than I had expected. As I get older, obviously, this thing becomes exponentially more difficult because, one, I have to run further, and two, the aging process is sort of bearing down on me. So, but that's the whole idea. That's the challenge of it. But I guess what this one taught me was that preparation really does make a difference. Because in years past, many times I try to do my birthday run sort of off of memory and just a base, and don't train that much for it. And I pay for it in the second or third. The second half or the third quarter of it, or the third, you know, third of it, if you will. And as a result, you know, I'm just doing the survivor shuffle through the end of it. But this one, I put a lot of pressure on myself because I was finishing in Fenway and needed to be there at a certain time. So did the appropriate training, and it ended up being relatively, and I mean relatively, easy. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah, I got your email. I saw the pictures. That was pretty cool. So you went the marathon route. You ran out from Boston out to Hockenden and ran back, and then went to Fenway.
Yeah.
Is that what you did?
Yeah, I just thought I was just trying to put all the synergy together. You know, marathon race director, so run the marathon course. Birthday coming up, so do the birthday run. 30th anniversary of the run across the country. Finished at Fenway Park, so try to put all those pieces together. So what I ended up doing is starting at about 4 in the morning at the finish line of the marathon and running out to Hopkinton and then turning around and running back, crossing the finish line of the marathon where we started, and then, you know, sort of running through Com Ave and Kenmore Square down Lansdowne Street and finishing inside Fenway.
So do you ever, you know, I saw that Joan Benoit showed up to run you in and some other folks.
Yep.
So do you ever have to, like, pinch yourself and go, oh, my God, look at me?
I don't. Right. But I don't take for granted that I'm out there doing this and that I have a lot of support and a lot of friends like Joan and many others who, you know, rally around these kinds of things. And I think it's all about not only preparation physically, but preparation organizationally and putting all the pieces together and giving everyone enough lead time to make their plans. And then, you know, I had a motorhome with me, and I had a video crew, and I had, you know, friends who ran some of the distance, other friends who ran the entire distance, and state police escort all the way from Hopkinton to Boston, city and town police out there and escorts. And these are just folks who, you know, I work with on a regular basis on the marathon and the Jimmy Fund walk. And they just wanted to come out to help and support. And some of them even ran with me. It was great. It was great. The weather was, you know, a lot of times on these kind of treks or these adventures, the weather is 90% of it, and for once it somewhat cooperated. Last year it was 90-some-odd degrees, and it was brutal, but this year it seemed to be a little bit more palatable, and so it didn't affect me as much physically as it did last year.
Yeah, and I don't think you got the rain that day, right? Was that one of the days it didn't rain?
It actually did rain, but we were at the 25-mile point of the marathon course right before Kenmore Square on the way back, and we had made a quick stop just to regroup before we headed into the finish line and then on to Fenway. And during that stop, it just started really coming down, pouring out. So we all just jumped in the motorhome for 15 minutes and waited it out and then went back out there. So I built in enough time to get me to where I needed to be at specific times, so it wasn't a deterrent by any means.
Yeah, because we had a strange week that week. It rained like that every night that week, I remember.
Yeah. I mean, the forecast was for just, you know, afternoon thunder showers, and it basically happened, so.
Right. So does the finish line stay painted on the road down there all year round?
Well, it's an interesting trivia thing that we're the only race probably in the world who paints their finish line on the road the day after the race versus before the race. What we do is we lay down a 3M adhesive material, which is our line, for race day. And then once the race is over, we rip that up, because it can become a hazard once it wears out. So we tear that up, and then the next day after the marathon, we actually paint a stencil on the road, the line itself. And we do that primarily for tourism more than anything else, because people like to, when the duck tour boats go over it, they mention, oh, we're crossing over the finish line of the Boston Marathon. People throw their hands up and stuff like that. So, the line is effectively there all year round.
But you don't have, like, the next year's race logo there, like the big 4-foot wide thing?
I mean, it's wide. I mean, it's the logo is there. Everything is on the line itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
So the whole thing, not just the line. Oh, that's cool.
Right.
Is that nice?
Exactly. Oh, yeah, the whole thing. Yep.
And, yeah, it's great. So the tourists can get on and mug for photos.
Yes.
Crossing the finish line.
Yep, exactly.
It shows what I know. I took the duck boat tour once. That's actually a riot. Boston's a good city for that because it's got the water and Boston's real small and compact, so the duck boat tour is great there.
Well, funny story, a friend of mine, Jack LaDuc, who paints the starting line, a couple of years he painted the finish line, and he's from Hopkinton, Ashland area, so he doesn't get to Boston that often. And about 10 years ago when he was driving into Boston in order to paint the finish line, He couldn't actually find where the finish line was, so he pulled over and he asked the police officer. He said, you know, he said, officer, he says, I'm looking for the Boston Public Library. Can you tell me where that is? And the officer said, well, yeah, that's right at the, you know, do you know where the finish line of the Boston Marathon is? And Jack says, yeah, I do. It's in my trunk. He says, because he had the stencils in his trunk, he says, I'm trying to get to the Boston Public Library so I can paint the finish line. But it was funny how the officer basically was detailing how to get to a building based on where the finish line of the marathon is, you know.
Right, like everybody would know where that is, right?
Like everyone would, you know, it's pretty obvious where it is. And, you know, Jack says, yeah, I know where the finish line is. It's in my trunk.
Yeah, but, you know, every year when I go in to pick up my number and stuff, you know, it's kind of cool to see the, you know, to see the state grandstand set up and the finish line.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it gives you a little buzz. You're like, oh, this is great. And then you think, okay, next time I'm going to be here, I'm going to be in...
I'll be crossing the finish line,
a different state of mind, so to speak.
Yeah. Yep.
So, it's actually pretty cool. I think that's a great idea. So anyhow, I didn't catch you on TV. I saw some of the, I guess it was a telethon, right?
It was the WEEI Radio and NESN Telethon those 2 days, August 14th and 15th. That's why I did the run on the 14th versus on my birthday itself, or on August 29th, actually, this Friday is the 30th anniversary of running into Fenway and my finish. So I had three dates in mind that I could have done this, the 14th during the radiothon, the 22nd, which is my actual birthday, or the 29th, which is the actual finishing date. So the Jimmy Fund suggested that they felt that the better day for them would be during the radio telethon, so that's when I did it.
That's great. How did you guys do? Did you raise a lot of money?
Well, right now I'm at about $26,000. My goal is $34,520, which represents $10 a mile for each mile I ran across America in 78. So I'm getting close to it. You know, a couple more weeks, hopefully, of fundraising, and I'll get there and then turn over the check to the Jimmy Fund.
So you go. Anybody who wants to contribute, go to DMSE.com?
Yeah, dmsesports.com, and right on the front page there, they can click on donate, and they can go to the donation page and donate that way. And, you know, obviously it all goes to the Jimmy Fund.
Yeah, I think, you know, having read your book and knowing you a little bit, I think the three things that I would say, you know, you're sort of famous for in this case is, one, all the running that you do, but also, you know, just it's all for a charity. It's all for a purpose, right? And then the third thing is you're the most organized and and planning oriented person that a lot of people have met, you know.
In terms
of the way you go about these things, it's like a small military campaign.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, on the organizational side, you're right. I am anal about logistics and organization and whatnot, and you know, do have a knack for being able to juggle a lot of things in the air at once based on, you know, having a vision for where you want to end up and then charting a course for that and putting everything in writing and making sure you communicate that far and wide so that everyone, you know, understands what the game plan is and then following up. So, yeah, I mean, organizationally, that's where my strength is. And then in the running side of things, you know, it's interesting, you know, what's happened in the industry today where, you know, years and years ago in the 60s and 70s and even early 80s, running was just a very, very personal thing and was very competitive. And now it's more of a participatory, you know, sort of athletic endeavor, you know, or activity, if you will. I mean, people are competitive, but more with themselves than they are with the person they're lining up next to. But in order to achieve certain goals, you know, it's interesting to see what happens when you combine a philanthropic or altruistic or giving back aspect to it, and then that can be explosive. And, you know, you can raise a lot of money and you can accomplish things that you maybe once never thought were possible by virtue of the fact that you're doing it not only for yourself but for someone else. And so I started doing that, you know, 30 years ago when I did my run across the country, raising money for the Jimmy Fund, and little did I know then that, you know, that a lot of people down the road were going to be using running and participating in these events as a means and a method to to help those who are less fortunate. So I do what I can, you know, as a lot of other people do.
Yeah, but I think it's built into your personality type. I think you'd go nuts if you couldn't do all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm challenged, but I'm realistic about the goals that I set. You know, I try to set it up for success, not failure, but make it
yeah.
challenging enough that, you know, not just anybody, you know, on the street would necessarily do it. You know, and like I said, with the birthday run, when I did 53 miles last year, it was painful. It was obviously a long way, and I was just
yeah.
out there running for myself, you know, because I do this every year. But this year, I challenged myself by saying, I'm going to raise money for the Jimmy Fund. I'm going to visit the clinic. I'm going to tell the kids what I'm going to do. I'm going to cut the deal with the Red Sox. I'm going to plan to be at Fenway at a certain time and run in. Now, you set up all that, all those pressures, if you will, but they're positive pressures. Now
yeah.
you have to do something about it. So now you say, I can't mess with this one. I have to really prepare for it. And so the end result was that this year, even though it was longer and I'm older, was easier than any of the probably last 10. You know,
right.
so it's an interesting lesson that if you really want something bad enough, you know, the goal may seem, you know, out of reach or maybe too aggressive, but if you do the work that is necessary to get there, I think in most instances, if the goal is realistic, you'll get there.
Yeah, you're setting yourself up to succeed. You're you're essentially, you know, you're burning your canoes, getting rid of all your excuses.
There are no excuses, right? Right.
Right. Right. That's what I just spoke to a guy in Quebec City, and that's what they say: burn the canoes.
Yeah.
If you burn the canoes, they can't get back across the river, and they have to stand and fight. Right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it's just a general philosophy that, you know, the bottom line is lucky just to be out there doing it, let alone what it feels like or how fast or how far. Just the fact that you're there, you're present, you're in the moment, that's the reward in and of itself. And
yeah,
I say to so
exactly.
many people when I give talks, I said, you know, all of us in this room have one thing in common. And they're all looking at each other, it's like, what's that? And I said, the thing we have in common is that we all woke up this morning. Not everybody on the planet did. And you didn't have a whole heck of a lot to do with waking up. But you do have an awful lot to do with what happens the rest of the day. So, you know, it's in your own hands. It's up to you to decide, you know, what you want to do with it. You know, and for me, I want to make as the most out of it as I possibly can.
Yep, you're absolutely right. You know, I've had that same sort of epiphany again last week where I was starting to get down on myself, and I was like, wait a second, you got to be in the moment, you know? Look, you're still alive, you're all running.
Right.
This is great, you know? This is a gift.
Yeah, so, and we all, you may look at someone and say, geez, that guy's got, you know, the world, you know, at his fingertips, you know, and you know, he's got this, he's got that, he's got a good family, he's got money, he's got a business, he's got whoever that person might be, but reality is they're all going through what we're going through, too. Nobody...
Yep.
immune to challenges, whether it's physical, business, family, health. Everyone has them. It's just how you deal with them, how you cope, you know, and how you challenge it and how you balance. And that's really, it's up, you know, as much as we all have support and we all have a support system around us, or most of us do, at the end of the day, you know, in essence, we're all alone. You know, you're really all alone, and you got to do it for yourself first, and, you know, charity starts at home, so.
Yeah, that's a great message. That's a good message. That way you're going to be successful no matter what happens.
That's right. Exactly.
So you're setting yourself up to succeed again.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
So what do you got coming up next? I guess the BAA half would be the next thing, or the cross-country races are next.
Well, my schedule is for the first time, we're directing the Race for the Cure, the Komen Race for the Cure, this year, and that's on September 7th at UMass Boston. So we expect to get, you know, around 7,000 participants in that event. So that's next up on the 7th, and then 2 weeks after that is the Boston Marathon Jimmy Fund Walk. So this is the 20th Jimmy Fund Walk, so that's historic in and of itself. So we expect to get around 7,000 walkers in total, and hope to raise, you know.
You don't do any small races, do you?
Not many small ones anymore. I mean, like everyone else, you know, started with smaller events, and now, you know, basically just focus on the, you know, the higher profile, higher level, bigger ones, you know, because we can handle them. And my attitude is that sometimes, you know, it takes as much effort to put on a small event as it does a larger one, so why not do a large one, you know,
sure,
and raise more money or just get more done, you know, and accomplish more. So we'll do the Jimmy Fund Walk and raise $6-7 million in that event on September 21st. And then I have a walk up here in my hometown area in Andover, Hike the Hope for the Lazarus House. And then after that, we have the BA Half Marathon on the, I think it's on the 14th of October. And then I have the Denver Marathon on the 21st of October.
You're doing the Denver Marathon?
Yeah, I have been for the last, this is the third year I've been directing the Denver Marathon.
I'm going to be out there, but I think I'm going to be out there on the 9th of October.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
The following week.
Yeah, half marathon, marathon, you know, so stops and finishes right in downtown, and it goes through Lodo, and then it goes through the three city parks, and it's a really nice course we designed and everything, and it's doing pretty well. We'll get about 10,000 people in total for all the events for that race, so.
Does anybody struggle coming from the lower altitudes to marathon?
We haven't really noticed, you know, anyone just overwhelmingly criticizing the fact that the effort was so much more difficult. You know, so far everyone who's participated has, you know, they've done well, and they've thought it was a great event. And certainly, the altitude does make a difference, I suppose, but I think that's a uniqueness, and that's a challenge. I mean, you can look at it and say, well, that's altitude, I'm not running that. Or you could say, hey, that's something different. I'd like to be able to say I ran a mile high, you know, marathon at a mile high, you know, kind of a thing. And, you know, it's like Mount Washington, people say, well, you know, it's why you're running up a mountain, you know, just because of the challenge of it. You know, it's only one hill. You know, so, that hasn't been a deterrent at all, you know, so.
I seem to remember you were involved in the Feast or Five too. Was that?
Yeah, right? and then after Denver, then my next event would be the Feast of Five, and this is the 21st year for that. Last year I got over 8,000 people in that one. So I have that, and then after that on December 2nd, I think it is, we have the Marathon of the Palm Beaches in West Palm Beach. So this is the fifth year for that race that I direct. So yeah, I got a bunch of events still bearing down on us. September, October, you know, and the fall, and the fall is the busiest time for me anyways in terms of events. So
yeah, I mean that weekend that you're doing the BAA half, there's got to be 100 races that.
No, I know. Tufts the next day, and you have Chicago Marathon. I mean, there's a lot of events on the weekend. So.
Because the weather's getting nicer. I mean, today is beautiful. The weather
But we still, you know, fill up in record time. I think it was a couple of days, 2 days or something or whatever, 2.5 days, we filled up the half. You know, Beach to Beacon, we filled up in 24 hours. I mean, it's just extraordinary to just be part of that. You know, just, you know, you flick the switch for online registration for these events and, you know, 24, 48 hours later, you're done. You know,
I bet there's a bunch of race directors out there, you know, swearing if they're listening.
I know. Well, I have other races where I have to, you know, do what everyone else has to do and print, you know, tens of thousands of applications and stuff envelopes and do mailings and do advertising and collect all of it. And, you know, I mean, some races you're fortunate that, you know, you have the attraction and you can, I mean, it's a good thing, bad thing. I mean, in one sense, it's neat to be able to just see that happen. On the other hand, you know, you do end up turning away a lot of people. So in certain regards, you end up making more enemies than friends because these things are so popular that they close out so fast, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Then I bet you get, you're like a rock star. You have a bunch of phone calls from people you didn't know were your friend, right? Saying, hey, get me an entry.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
I ran that race. I told you when it, the first year they ran it, that BAA half, when we went through Fenway. It was either the first or the second year.
That was the second year. Yeah.
That was awesome.
Well, right now, our, you know, we're struggling with the concept that it is such a popular event that, you know, we're looking at, well, can we expand it? And can we bring it up a whole bunch of notches? And, you know, at the current venue, it just, you know, I don't want to sacrifice quality for quantity. So in order to increase the quantity, we would have to relocate the start-finish.
Yeah.
So I'm considering moving it over to Fenway Park and right on Lansdowne Street and Yawkey Way and doing it there on a day that the Red Sox are out of town and then have it, you know, start there and then finish there, the last half mile run through Fenway and then come out and finish, you know, and then have a big block party and the whole nine yards. So I'm looking at the possibility of that in terms of permission from the Sox and from the city, and we're working on that conceptually. Whether it'll come to fruition remains to be seen, because more scheduling than anything else, because then we would have to move it from October to another month, because you can't have it in October because you don't know what the playoff schedule is going to look like, even if there is one, hopefully.
Right.
And so you'd have to put it on a date where the Red Sox already have a schedule so that you can look at it in advance and know which weekend they're not in town and pick that one. And the downside to that, too, is that you'd have to change it every year from one weekend to the following weekend and back again as their schedule changes, you know.
Right.
But it would be worth it because we could increase the field size, and it would just be a lot more exciting to have it start and finish over there.
Yeah, because the course is already beautiful, and it's nice and wide once you get out on the out on the Ample Necklace. It's,
exactly.
It's nice and wide.
Exactly.
The only, if I remember, the only tight point would be at the turnaround up at the zoo, and you'd be spread
out.
Well,
I'd probably ax that. I'd probably have to turn, you know, cut that out. You know, there have to there'd be some minor surgery we'd have to do with the course to open it up, but 90% of it wouldn't change, you know.
Yeah, and that's why the race is so popular. It's right in the center of Boston, but it's all basically in a park.
And I don't think that any other, I don't think there are any other races on the Emerald Necklace, right, you know, as much as we use. I think, you know, a lot of races in Boston, it's the same old, you know, it's Commonwealth Ave or it's Memorial Drive or, what, you know, every you run them all the time. But this one is, you know, it's unique in that I think it's the only race that runs on that piece of real estate, which is kind of neat, so.
Yeah,
I gotta jump on. I'm sorry.
So you gotta jump on another call.
Yeah, Denver Marathon call. I gotta call at 10 o'clock.
Good.
That I was gonna jump on.
So. That works for me too. I was trying to think of a good way to nicely get you off the phone. So.
Yeah. Get rid of this guy. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, well, thanks for your time. I'm glad we could do it again. And
all right.
I'll make sure I save this one. All right.
Okay. Good. Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right.
You take care of yourself. Okay. Bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
We're recording. I'll let you swallow. Okay, so give it to me step by step, the Girl Scout thing.
You're stupid. Okay, so you're going to need a plastic bag, at least one egg.
And then what?
Some milk.
Then what? Go ahead.
Ingredients if you want something in your omelet. A pan that's big enough for the plastic bag to boil in without touching the bottom.
Ziploc bag.
Yeah. And water, obviously. So what I do, first thing I do is I put water in the pan and I put it on boil because it takes a little bit for our stove to get to boil.
A saucepan.
Yes. And then I get a cup, one of these cups here.
Yeah.
I don't know how big that is. I'm horrible
with that. That's probably about a cup and a half.
Yeah, so I get a cup like that, and I put the bag in it.
Yeah.
And I tuck the edges out.
Oh, like a trash can.
Yeah. That makes it so it doesn't slide around when you're putting stuff in it.
Yeah.
First I put the egg in, then you put the milk in, and you put whatever ingredients you want in it. You zip it up, and then you shake it around a little bit and drop it in the boiling water. I boil mine for about 5 to 10 minutes until it stops sloshing around. If you take it out and shake it, the inside shouldn't slosh around at all.
And then what do you get? Look at what you get here. You get a...
You get an omelet shaped like a bag.
That's amazing.
It's very pretty.
See, I'm 47 years old almost, and I had never known this. See, you teach me things.
It's compact and it's easy. And if you don't want to eat it now, you can put it in your lunchbox and eat it later.
You can put it back in the bag.
Yeah.
And put it back in the fridge.
Yeah.
And it only doesn't really dirty anything, does it?
It doesn't. You just pour out the water and let the pan dry.
It's awesome. Thank you. So you excited about being on vacation with me?
No.
What's your favorite podcast?
Run, Run, Live.
How are those pancakes?
Yummy.
Okay. Need to go buy some crickets today, so we'll go down to Staples and get your calculator.
Need to hire some crickets
to take care of our lizard.
Okay, this is Chris. That concludes episode 9, our time travel trip to the past with Mr. Dave McGilvery. And we will have 3 up this week. Going to be our Canadian week. Let's see here. I got a tune for you. It's called Living for the Moment, sort of a message song here, and it's by, I'll have to go with Marc Douaron, maybe Douaron, but it looks like Douaron. Since it's French-Canadian week, it'll be Douaron, and I will see you out there. Listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, Run, Live, the podcast for all your running needs.